Hang on, I gotta do my
Blog
movie
Talk
countdown.
Radio.
It's not showing it here, though. It's not showing it on the studio screen.
Yeah, that's strange. Okay. Let me do this.
This is All About Wine, the talk show dedicated to the wine industry since 2009. Featuring winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron.
H2O is trying to build this program. It's just trying to...
Now it says we're on the air.
Wine less confusing and more friendly.
Yeah.
From coast to coast and around the world.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that.
Post your questions and comments during the live show on our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. Again, that's www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. And now, All About Wine is on. Here's Ron.
Yep, the one and only.
Thank you, Busby.
They're
a little quiet tonight, you know. They seem to be.
You can hear it on your end.
Out there. I can hear it. Yes.
Yeah, it is. Good. Yeah. Right, last week we couldn't, so yeah, we're back in business the way it should be. It is
the way it should be.
I don't
know.
My phone
says
it's 7:01. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it says 7:01, so it'd be.
Mine says 7:01 also, but we just. Yeah, you know, I don't know.
I think
know.
The timer in the upper left corner of the studio is off.
Yeah, it's, so, it's
off there.
We have this nice little British girl that tells us what's going on, so we don't have to pay attention to the time. And for some reason, she jumped in there and a minute ahead during the countdown and confused us lots.
We're sitting there watching our clocks, and it says, 2 minutes. And she goes, your show will start in one. It's like, wait, no.
No.
Give us
2 minutes. Yeah. That's not right. That's not right.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but here we are.
Yep.
We
the show is going on.
Here we are. Welcome to another episode of All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio. It is November the 11th. 2021. So if you have any questions or anything, you can always go in and message us through Facebook on the All About Wine BTR app. I guess that's the way.
On BTR on the show page for this show, there's a chat link there. It opens up a box and you can chat with us on that. If you're watching or listening on YouTube or on the Facebook page, you can just comment there, and we'll get it here during the live show. If it's any other time of the year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not, we're not live. Yeah.
Right.
And we're going to start wishing all veterans out there happy Veterans Day. Thank you so much for your service and for your sacrifices and everything that you put into it. Everybody says thank you for your service and your sacrifice. There's other things to it, too, emotional things. I mean, the number of Dear John letters that were sent out during military service and stuff like that, it's unbelievable. And there's also, I had an opportunity during the Gulf War? No, Afghanistan. No, Iraq. When a couple of young men were employed over in Iraq, and their wives came into the winery and we were talking, and I said, boy, it must be really nice to be able to talk time with your husbands over there and be able to do it then. I said, when I was in Vietnam, I said, we had nothing but letters. There was no correspondence. We were lucky if we were able to get a phone call across the ocean. I mean, it was rare that we were able to even call home. And when we did, it was usually to say hi to our parents and not to girlfriends. And I wasn't married, so, you know, no spouse. But one of the girls said, yeah, she said, but you don't get the emotion with the Facebook and or with FaceTime and Zoom and stuff like that. She says, the emotion doesn't come through. You feed off of people's emotions when you talk to them. She said, and it really is weird because you tend to lose a connection. And I never thought about that. I guess when you're talking to someone like that, and they're going to be gone for a year, and it's going to give you different vibes, if you will, than if you're face-to-face and stuff like that. So it's a rough situation. I mean, whenever any family member is deployed, it's rough no matter what. So even if you do have Zoom or FaceTime or anything, it's still rough. So it's another sacrifice that soldiers make, and be it male or female, and plus all the other stuff that comes with it. So again, all of our veterans out there, thank you very much. There's a lot of freebie stuff going on today for veterans. If you can look it up, the VA sites have a list of it. If it's, well, it's getting late, but VA sites have a list of all the freebie stuff out there, so you can check it out. And enjoy the day, and thank you for your service. I always wondered what type of response to give. People would say, thank you for your service, and I would say, well, you're welcome, which seemed like a weird response to me. But then I had an old vet tell me, when someone thanks you for your service, then the best response might be, thank you for your support. And I love that response. So any of you vets out there who are thanked for your service, you can always respond with thank you for your support, because, you know, them thanking you is supporting you. Unlike so many times, you know, as a Vietnam vet, I'll tell you what, there wasn't a whole heck of a lot of support when I got back from Vietnam. We were labeled baby killers and all sorts of stuff. So it was rough for Vietnam vets. And so whenever people want to give you the support, that's great. So as a vet, then thank you for your support, I think, might be a very good response to a thank you for your service. But enough of my editorializing. Thanks, guys and gals, for what you put into it. And we will go on from there. Got a few things to talk about tonight. Nothing earth-shattering, nothing important, just a bunch of stuff that I've come across over the past week or so that I'm just going to pass on to you. There's different things that I've found. I've saved some of it, other stuff. I'm just going to look at it when I find it here. Let me see if I can start out with anything that I've found. Let's see. Now, this is the page I want. No, this isn't. Or is it? No. Okay. You're going to have to put up with me looking at stuff tonight and trying to figure out if that's what I want to talk about to you or not. And if it is, then I will read it and go on. Yeah, like right then, there's a little pause right then with me trying to figure out what was going on. So let me find some of the things that I saved here, some of the things that I have looked at that I want to talk to you about. And Not there. Here, this is something I'm going to talk. Massive change proposed for Champaign region. This is a new plan is going to cut the densities of the planting. One of the biggest changes that the Appalachian has ever had, the Champaign Appalachian, lowering the number of vines per hectare. This is to create a better quality, so they say. The quest for a lower density began about 35 years ago under the pressure from Moet Hennessy, which is now no longer Moet Hennessy, is now called LVMH. I don't know what the LV stands for, MH, obviously Moet Hennessy. But they have been trying to cut down on the density of the vineyards for a number of years now, many years ago now. And is finally starting to take effect. The vine training system that divides the canopy horizontally into two curtains for pointing shoots is called a lyre system, named after the trellising system, named after, I'm sure, the musical instrument, the lyre. And with the distance between the rows of 3 to 4 meters, it says that this system would not be economically feasible in Champaign. And in 1995, a single curtain alternative was added to the test. And here the rows were planted 2.2 meters apart, so the density is greater. The old system created 2,700 to 3,000 vines per hectare, and this one jumps it up to 3,800. And they, at the beginning of 2000, the lyre system, despite what it could do, was replaced by the new system. But it is looking at a new approach to this now, a even less dense approach than what they're doing now, and cutting it back to the less. So if that's the case, they're going to, it's not going to do any, it's going to increase quality is what it's ultimately they're hoping it's going to do, cut back to less grape per acre, which is should increase quality on the vines themselves. So the Pinot Noir, Meunier, and Chardonnay are the vines that are most always used for champagne. And these are the ones that they're looking at doing now. There are some vineyards that, whoops, what happened here? Oh, geez. Some vineyards, well, I lost my article. Some vineyards are already at that density and some are not. And so they're making it laws, again, champagne laws, because they're so fond of doing all that stuff over there, making champagne region laws and stuff around the world that, to do it. So as that develops, as that comes out, I will keep you informed. And there's more I was going to tell you, but I can't find where the article was. Oh, I hate it when I do that. Well, so much for that then. I get the San Francisco Chronicle because there's so many articles about the wine regions, Napa's and all that, and I get a couple other smaller papers in Napa. Napa has a small paper that comes out, and I get that weekly email. And the San Francisco Chronicle's out. But in last Sunday's San Francisco Chronicle, they had an exclusive offer for sale in Sonoma. And this is, in fact, I'll try to put this over on the Facebook page. I should be able to let you see the videos and all the stuff on this. But this is, I used to talk about real estate all the time, and then the source of that real estate that I was getting, I no longer receive it, so I stopped doing that. But this is in Sonoma. And let me run through this quickly with you. It's an oasis comprised of 6 fully usable acres, including an active farm, a modern barn-style home, and it's a short mile from historic Sonoma Square. It's called Sonoma Broadway Farms, and that's what it's known as. It's the mecca of entertaining, relaxing, and living in a wine country dream, and it is a turnkey investment opportunity for you now. You can watch the sunrise over the Golden Sonoma Hills. They've got an outdoor yoga studio. Afternoons can be spent by the side-by-side Bocce, is that how it's pronounced? B-O-C-C-E, Bocce ball courts. You can sip your own wine grown on your own estate with your own label. There is biking to the square, so you can jump on a bike. There's bikes for rent. There is harvesting your own food from your large garden. There's a state-of-the-art kitchen that is located under a 40-foot vaulted ceiling. And for those special occasions, there's a network of professional chefs who have prepared meals for hundreds of past visitors, and they are on the list, ready to come out and prepare it again if so needed, or any other type of chef, not just dessert chef and stuff like that. And at the end of the day, you can grab a blanket and cozy up by the fire pit that is located there. It has gotten dozens of five-star reviews, and it's also a lengthy book of businesses, phenomenal on-demand staff to manage everything for you, and it will also create a space for renting that you can just rent out sections of it and get a constant income and just let life take care of itself around you with that. Once in a lifetime opportunity. They have 111 photos showing the whole property and everything here. There is also a almost 4-minute video showing the property. The residence itself, the floor plan itself for the residence is 3,244 square foot residence. There is a bunk barn and an entertainment space that's right next door to it. It has a vineyard, active farm, volleyball courts, yoga studio, garden barn, gardens, orchards, greenhouse, solar panels, well, entertainment courtyard, fire pit, pool, prime build site. So I don't know if it has a pool in it or not. A bunk barn, outdoor shower, bikes. It's furnished, property management services, rental potential, event space, agricultural zoning, high ceiling, chef's kitchen, indoor, outdoor living, quiet and private, prime location, and a big parking lot. And, it's just a short bike ride, a very short bike ride from the town of Sonoma. And you can have all this for the... it's 4 bedrooms, 3 full baths, 1 half bath on 6.01 acres for only $6,475,000, which is really, really cheap because I'm looking at houses in California and, you can't find anything for less than $1 million. It's just unbelievable. In the San Francisco area, houses... Unless you get outside of the San Francisco area, you can go to places like Morna Creek or Livermore and stuff like that. But your commute's going to have to be on the train going in, the BART train. And if you want to live in San Francisco, then everything starts at $1 million on up from there. So when you start looking at a 6.475, it's a great price. So there you go. I'll see if I can't get this posted on our Facebook page. And I say I'll see if I can't get this posted because I am not noted for my abilities to be able to do this stuff very easily. Well, let's see. It shows the Facebook there. So I might be able to do it easier than I thought. But it's just a fascinating property. I saw this. And I went, oh, wow. And it's been there. I've seen it for like 3 weeks in a row now. So it's not like it's immediately selling. But it's just really fun to look at it, look at all the stuff that's offered on it and everything else. Listed by Blakely Hall team. So Blakely Hall. Blakely, I guess, is the girl's name. Is the realtor's name, Blakely. Blakely Hall. So there you go. I've been saving that one to tell you about it. So I got it and I'll throw it up on Facebook so you can enjoy that. We had a guest on, I don't know how long ago. In fact, Mike and I were talking about it just before the show, and I forgot to ask him when it was on because he's usually pretty good about finding the dates. But we had a guest on about having wine futures, about what it was all about and investing in wine futures. Interesting guess. If you have extra money, then wine futures would be a good way to go. Something came in. Wine futures would be a good way to do it. But I get the emails on it because I want to, not that I have a whole lot of money for wine futures, it's just that I want to pass information on to you. And the latest email is, he said that the last couple of weeks, besides just being football season, tailgate season, and the corn mazes out there and the apple picking and cool temperatures, he said the wine market has really started to pick up. He says it's amazing how much it has picked up. Vinovest 100, these are the top 100 wines that are out there that are available for you to, you know, put futures on. But Vinovest 100 over the year to date has went up 15.06%. Nothing out there you can get at 15%. No matter what you do, there's nothing you're going to get at 15%. Okay, maybe Bitcoins or something, but that's awful risky. But Vinovest, I suppose, is too, but not as risky as Bitcoins. But 15.06. The S&P 500 over the same period is up about 15.06%. The FTSE 100, only 3.01%. Gold is up 8.71%. Bitcoin, and like I just said, that is the big one. That's up 302.75%. The VGSLX, whatever market that is up 6.40%. And the NASDAQ is up a lot at 31.29%. So these are yearly projections on this. So Vinovest is one of the better investments right now in getting something in the luxury line. If you're going to do fine wine, and it's from June 2020 to June 2021, fine wine has went up 13%. Watches, luxury watches, 5%. Classic cars has only went up 4%. But if you're into blue chip art, that dropped 2%. And Hermes handbag, I guess I'm saying that right, I'm not familiar, but that's dropped 3%. And rare whiskey, if you're collector of those, I have a nephew that's whiskeys and rare whiskeys, and that's dropped 4%. So, to echo his sentiments on when he was on the show about how it is really a good investment, it looks like it from this here. Italian wines are another one that's really exploding now. This article goes on to say how much Italian wines are in demand, especially fine Italian wine. So this is becoming a great, great market. And then there's a little thing here. Well, I'll read that in a minute. A little thing here. The United States is the largest, most profitable market for wine, beer, and spirits producers, but it's far from perfect. The industries have a lot of consolidation and fragmentation, which separate tiers for production, distribution, and retail. The president is poised to shake up the whole system. In July, he signed another one of his executive orders to analyze market access for smaller, independent, and new businesses into various industries, including fine wine. The order will also examine the effects of consolidating alcohol production, distribution, and retailing in the United States. Findings for the order are due within the next 2 months. So by the end of the year, we'll find out what's going on with that. And what does this mean for the wine producers? Smaller brands should have a more level playing field against their big-name counterparts. It appears, the president appears to set an increasing competition and dismantling the archaic three-tier system in order to increase consumer choice. That would be phenomenal if that really happens. I just, you know, the tree chair system, in my opinion, is so archaic. It needs to be revamped. It needs to be changed. That's part of the reason some of the prices that you pay for some of the stuff is what it is, because the tree tier system has created more expense in purchasing wines than it really should in some areas. So maybe this might be a step in the right direction. Let's hope so. Let's hope something really does become substantial out of this, because the tree tier system, I am not a fan. Owning a small winery is you can't use a three-tier system and get anything done. When I had the winery, we had all the license. We had a distributor's license, we had a manufacturer's license, and we had a retail license, which is unusual. But we were able to get all three of them, and they were all legal, and we kept up with them, paid our fees every year and all that. We kept them. Much to the dismay of Southern Wine and Spirits, they knew we had all three licenses, and they weren't thrilled, and they tried to stop us a couple of times, but it was ruled that there's nothing they can do about it. We were in good standings, and so therefore we were able to keep them, which didn't do us a lot of good all the time, but it was a good thing to have, because if we had to go through Southern Wine and Spirits, which is the big one here in the Southeast, they put something in a store, if it wasn't selling for what they thought it would or in the time they thought it would, they would reduce the price and sell it for whatever they wanted to. And that would just, nothing we could do about it. We say we want $15 for this bottle. They would put it on the shelf for $17. It wouldn't sell for $17. They dropped $15. They dropped to $10. They drop it in the bargain basket for $6. And then they'd send us a percentage of that and say, here, that's what you get. And there's nothing we could do. We were just grateful we got anything out of it. And so as our own distributor, if it wasn't selling, we can always do our own bargaining or pull it off the shelf. But the three-tier system, you have to go through a distributor most of the time. And that's one of the things that most small wineries and small breweries and small distilleries hate, because they lose a lot of their money on their sales on that. But it looks like something might happen. Haven't heard anything else. This, I'll have to check further on that, see if I can't find anything of what happened to that executive order that he signed there. A bottle of 2000 Chateau Montan Rothschild Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar is a big bottle right off the top of my head. I should have looked this up before I started talking to you about it. Nebuchadnezzar, I think, is, I want to say, 13 bottles, 14 bottles, regular 750 milliliter. I'm not sure. I can't remember. Okay, here it is. It's 15 liter. Nebuchadnezzar is 15 liter. So 750 milliliter out of that, so it's more than that, so it's about 20 750 milliliters, 21. So Nebuchadnezzar went up for auction, 2000 Chateau Montan Rothschild in Hong Kong, and by the time that it was sold, the winning bid set a new world record. That 15-liter bottle sold for a Hong Kong price, and it went up in Hong Kong. So it sold for Hong Kong dollars of $1,091,200, which is equivalent to U.S. dollars of $140,200. And this beat the previous records of $118,035. So big difference, 118,000 new record, 140,200 new record. So, wow. I guess there's people with money out there after all. Can you imagine that much for one bottle of wine? Jeez, it just makes you wonder. There's another article here. I'm not going to read you all this. It's an article here talking about the 10 most expensive wines, red and white. It tells you why they're expensive, which is something that I am going to talk to you about a little bit. I think if this lets me do it. Grapes and vintages. These are a big part of it. This is one of the big things that cause the prices to go up. The vineyard where the grape is harvested matters, and that affects the taste and the ageability of the wine, and the vintage is a lot to do with it, because if it were a good year, it's going to be able to age even better. So all these, this is the most important thing, the grapes and vintages. Next thing that's going to help a wine sell is the age. Wines that can age for decades in the bottle and improve in the taste over that time are going to demand more money. Then the novelty. And this is something you probably don't think of, but the unique packaging. It's has a lot to do with it. And I attended a class once for at the University of Florida. And the person, and I'm horrible in names, the person taught it was a very knowledgeable wine person. And he said, what is the biggest thing that contributes to the expense of expensive bottles of wine? And people were throwing out all this stuff and all that. And he said, no, he said, the biggest single thing is hype. It's the hype behind it. He said, sometimes the wines are not as good as what you expect or think, but the hype has made it more expensive just because it, the name behind it or the novelty or stuff like that, which it's always stuck with me. And you know, whenever I look at stuff and on wine, I'm thinking, well, yeah, it does have an effect. I've tasted some wines that were very, very expensive and they were good, but the hype created more of a cost on those. Another thing here on this list that tells you is brand. Well-known brands that have been around for a long time and have consistently made good quality wines will command a higher price. Prestige, and that's hype. They have prestige listed here, which basically is hype. The more prestige the brand is, the more attention it gets at auctions, and therefore the higher the price will be. And the critics' ratings, you get people like Robert Parker and James Suckling giving the wine a high score, it's going to create a higher price, and by a lot, really. It's, you know, if both of them give it. And then handling, and this is something that you really have to look at on any wine that you're going to purchase. If you're spending a little bit of money on it, you need to know the origins. And the storage history and what it's doing and how it's traveling and all that stuff. That's very, very, very important. That can make a difference between a bottle costing $200 and a wine that's $10,000. And I'm serious. It just, if a wine is not handled properly, even the best in the whole wide world can be treated poorly and turned bad. And so, therefore, that's why it's so important to know a history of a wine. And when you go to through reputable dealers, it's important to know that they are handling it right. And even in your local liquor store, when you go into your local wine shop or something like that, they should have an understanding of the chain of handling. And I don't know. And I've wondered more than on a few occasions, since all these ships are setting in ports around the world, especially outside of LA and San Diego and the West Coast ports, is there any wine shipments in those? I'm sure there are. I'm sure there's wine in those containers sitting out there in the ocean, and that can't be good for them. I'm sure those are not in refrigerated containers, refrigerated know, what's the big metal container. I can't think of what they're called right offhand, but they're just set there on top of the ships, and that's it. So this is going to affect it too if they're setting around out in heat or things like this. So it makes a big difference. I've got a story for you. I don't know if I've ever told you this story or not, but I got a story for you. We ordered, Florida Estates Winery ordered a container of wine from a winery in South America, Venus San Esteban. Went down, talked to him, saw him, tasted the wines, loved it, worked out a deal, and ordered a shipping container full. These type of shipping containers you see on ships. I mean, that's just what we got. We got one of those full. And we got a good price. And we ordered a Sauvignon Blanc. We ordered a Chardonnay, a Merlot, a Cabernet Sauvignon, and a Carmenere. And almost equal amounts of each of those. We worked with a importer in Miami because the shipment came from South America through the Panama Canal and up into Miami. And it was, I don't want to say it was climate controlled the whole way, but it wasn't real hot when we ordered it, when it was shipped to us. Well, it got to Miami, and they called us and said that it was in Miami, and it should be shipped out the next day, which was great. I mean, we were looking for it, and they were going to put it on a truck and bring it up to us and, you know, dump it off so we would have time to unload it. We didn't have to unload it while the truck was sitting there, because that would have been almost impossible, because it wasn't on pallets and we didn't have a forklift anyway. So we were expecting to get it. They called us on a Wednesday afternoon and said it should go out the next day. And from Miami to the winery, one day, they could have traveled up there. We got a call on Friday when it should have been there from the shipping company, and they said, this has been flagged. Homeland Security wants to check this container. We says, okay, but it needs to be up here. We don't want the thing sitting on the hot docks in Miami. And it was warm. I mean, we are in Florida all the time. We said, we don't want this sitting on the hot docks in Miami too long. We need to get that wine up here. They said, well, Homeland Security flagged it, and they're going to have to check it before they release it. And we asked how long. They said, usually it takes 2 or 3 days for Homeland Security to get around to something after they flagged it. We told them, keep us informed. Well, 5 days later, we still haven't heard from them. We called and we said, what's going on? They said, Homeland Security has not checked it yet. A week later, and this was on, we got the notice on a Friday afternoon. A week later, the following Friday, we got a call stating that Homeland Security has said they would be by on Monday. So that was, you know, 10, 11 days that had been sitting on docks in Miami full of wine for us. Finally, on Monday morning, they called and they said, it's being shipped today. You should have it this afternoon. So about 5 o'clock that afternoon, we truck pulls in and drops off the container for us and pulls away. And we break the Homeland Security seal on the back of the container because they had broken the original seal and put on their Homeland Security seal. And we open up the doors, and the wine boxes were stacked to the door. I mean, completely against the door. And we climb up on top and look around, and there was one box that was torn open and one bottle that was taken out and put back in the opposite way. And that was it. That was their inspection. And it also cost us $500. We got a bill from Homeland Security for inspection of cargo from Homeland Security for $500. And literally all they did was look at one bottle and pass it on through. Took them 10, 11 days to do that. It cost us $500 for them to do that. And it sat on the docks in Miami for that period of time. You can imagine my opinion of Homeland Security after that incident. I mean, okay, so you want money, but don't do it that way. All right, if you want to bleed businesses, don't do that. That's going to destroy the wine and do all sorts of stuff. But that's what happened. That's my story about, you know, shipping and Homeland Security and stuff like that. That's a story I share every once in a while with people if they want to talk about Homeland Security. Most expensive red wines this past year. 2015 Domaine Leroy Mussigny Grand Cru. Price for a bottle of it in France cost $1,260. And they describe it in all their great, spectacular names and things that they say, you know, a wine with aromas of raspberry, rose, sherry, spice, and all sorts of stuff, as they always do on these things. But $101,000. A 1937 Domaine de la Romanée Conti Grand Cru, another French wine, 1937 bottle, though, sold for $73,228 this last year. A 2015 Domaine George and Christopher Remur Mussigny, I guess it's pronounced, Grand Cru from France, $20,829. Most expensive whites from this past year. A 1992 Domaine Lafleur Montrachet Grand Cru, $14,100. That's, you're looking at a Chardonnay there. That's a Chardonnay. Another Chardonnay, a 2007 Leroy Domaine Auvernay Chevalier Montrachet Grand Cru is $12,765. And a third Romanée Conti Montrachet Grand Cru, Domaine de la Romanée Conti, went for $10,911. So it's a lot of money for a bottle of wine. A 1996 Dom Perignon Rose Gold, $56,679. A 2002 Louis Redur Crystal Gold Medallion Orfevres Limited Edition Brut Champagne, $4,938. And you have an Armand de Brignac Ace of Spades Collection, $3,559, all champagnes. Then we got some sweet wines here that went for way too much money. A Tokay Limited Edition, 2008, sold for $40,000. A 59 Egon Müller Trockenbaron Auslese sold for $27,346. And a W&J Graham Noble Tawny Port went for $8,239. Then they have eight wines that exceeded expectations at auction. I'm not going to go through all of those. Just suffice it to say, people have more money than they know what to do with, in my opinion, when they start spending that much money on a bottle of wine. I think a lot of the times what they will do is they will have themselves a party. and invite all their very rich friends and say, okay, I'm going to be pouring 3-ounce drinks of this. It's going to cost you $5,000 if you want to try this. The one and only chance you're ever going to. And I'm sorry, I've been saying this year, this is all time highs on this. This and this and this year, this is all time highs on these. But they have parties and they invite people over and they say, okay, $5,000 for 4 or 5 ounce pour. And, you know, $5,000 or whatever price they charge, they divide it up and all that, it's going to be a lot cheaper and they'll never find another bottle like that again in the rest of their life. So they might just, you know, the people say, okay, that will be a good opportunity to try that and not have to spend $168,000 or, you know, $304,000 or whatever to buy that bottle. We can get it for this price and still taste it. And that's guarantee you not one you're going to swirl and spit. That's what you're going to drink. And so there's some expensive, some of the most expensive wines ever sold there. And let's see, I'm going to put that away and I want to go to my next one here, which
we do have a quick question if you can take one here.
Yeah.
About it. Okay. Carolyn's asking off of Facebook, do they taste any better than my $10 bottle?
Yes. In a word, yes. Yes, they will.
So it is
you know, they will. You'll notice the difference. And you don't need, and this is something I used to say at the winery when people came in and they would ask basically the same question. Is there a difference between my $10 bottle of wine and a, you know, $600 bottle of wine? Yes, there is. Just like there's a difference between getting a hamburger at McDonald's for $1.25 and getting one at Denny's for $11.95. They're both hamburgers, but I'll tell you what, you can tell the difference. Okay, and that's the same thing with that, with wine. You can tell the difference. I've had wine, and this I always use this as a comparison. I've had wine that has cost, the most expensive I've ever had cost $900 a bottle. And it wasn't one I bought. It was one of those where a group of us shared it, and it was phenomenal. It was really, really good. You can tell that it was quality there. But I've also had wines that cost $400 a bottle, and that was very good too. And the difference between that $400 and that $900 was subtle. You could barely tell the difference in the two, but the quality of the $900 was definitely there over that $400 bottle. But when you're having a bottle that costs $10 and you jump up to one that costs $100, you're going to see a big, big difference there. Big, big difference. Then when you go from that $100 on up to thousands, the difference is subtle. It's going to be a taste. You're going to sip it and you're going to say, this is really, really good. But you're going to say, how's it good? Oh, it's just really good. And you'll know it's good. You'll know the quality there. But to be able to pinpoint it, and especially you don't have to use all these words that these wine tasters use, because I think half the time they're not really sure what they're talking about anyway. But there's going to be a difference there. So in a word, yes, that $10 bottle that you buy and that $100 bottle or that $1,000 or that $5,000, there's going to be a difference. Just like there's a difference between you sit down at a meal at, let's use Denny's again. You sit down at a meal at Denny's, and then you go into a 5-star restaurant, you order the same meal. It's going to cost you a lot more, but boy, you can really tell the difference because it's going to be premium ingredients. It's going to be prepared the way it's supposed to be prepared, and everything's going to be just how it should be. And you'll notice the difference in the taste and the flavors and everything, just like the wines. So a little bit more of an answer than you probably expected there, but yes, it is going to be noticeable. You will be able to tell the difference. So,
all right. Thank you for the question.
Yeah.
And if you have any other questions or anything, bring them on. You know, bring them to the show, and we'll try and answer them on the air for sure. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for the question. It's people used to ask that all the time at the winery. You know, is it really worth it? Is the wine truly worth it? Yeah, it is. You can tell the difference. You can tell the difference. You know, it's not like, well, people say, well, I don't have a sophisticated palate. I can't tell the difference. Yeah, you can. You don't need a sophisticated palate to know quality. You know, it doesn't require that. It doesn't require a sophisticated palate to be able to notice something is better than something else. So, and the same thing with wine. Okay, let's go back to Vino Vest again, and Anthony Zhang, who's the one that contacts me. There is a new mobile app for VinoVest. It's the world's most coveted wines at your fingertips, and it's a portfolio access anytime, update on wine valuations based on millions of data points, exclusive investment opportunities, and powerful mobile app makes it easier than ever to manage a wine portfolio, and it's 100% free. You can get into it, and you can check wines in it, and you can look at stuff, prices, and different things. It's 100% free. You can get it through the Apple Store or through Google Play, and go to VinoVest, VinoVest, in those stores and find it, and you can download it there. So, that just came out. Actually, that just came out a couple of days ago, that new app there. Okay. Now, let me go to a couple of others. Oh, geez. I'm talking more than I thought I would about some of this stuff. Restaurants are opening all over the place. Napa, restaurants opening, big city restaurants opening. One of the things that a lot of restaurants did when they closed throughout 2020 is to sell off their wines. And you can't blame them, because some of these wines were doing them no good sitting on the shelf. They usually move the product around and have it rotate by sales. And here it was sitting on the shelf, not doing anything. They're going to have customers in. There's a lot of places in New York City that sold their wine. They did it in auctions. They put it in papers and sold it. They offered it in all sorts of different venues, and they emptied out their shelves. Now that they're opening up, they don't have wine. So they are restocking. Well, one of the things that this is creating is a great opportunity for sommeliers in all of these different restaurants and all these different type of venues to restock and to get new wines in and to get different wines in. And this is what they're doing. And I say different wines. A lot of them are creating wine lists that are different than what they previously were. They are looking at different ones that they have discovered over the time that they weren't open, and they are starting to bring back some of them that sold, but they are not on some of them that they have found over the years that was not a big seller. And so they are changing their outlook on it. For example, Tribeca Grill didn't sell its 2,000 selection cellar, and it's relying on its existing inventory. But they are more focused on filling specific holes in the list that they don't have anymore. So they're developing new categories, and they're going for different styles of wines, and they're looking at some things that have not been on the list that are different. And they're not the only ones. There's a lot of restaurants throughout the country that are doing that. They're jumping up their total of certain wines, Cabernets and Pinot Noirs from California, have always been a good category, good selection, and some of them are filling in more on that. One market in San Francisco, sommelier there, the wine director, Tanya Pitts, has went from 900 wines down to 600, and more of a focus on seasonality than on just old wines that have been around and that cost a lot more. And this is what's happening in the business all the way around, not just in New York, but also here's one in Austin, Texas, that they're acknowledging that there's aren't many wineries owned or operated by internationally by intentionally ignored communities, and so therefore they want to bring in more diversity to their wine list and let people try wines that they would normally not. In fact, our guest last week, AJ, was a good example of that in his wine restaurant. He said that he had a whole bunch of different types of wines that you couldn't find anywhere else. And this article here is saying it's happening everywhere. They're starting to bring in some wines and let people make a personal decision on what they would like to do instead of saying, okay, we have this Cab, we have this Merlot, we have this Chardonnay, and we have this Riesling, and which one of these do you want and what price range? They're saying, okay, we have all these different wines that are available. Would you like to try something from Israel, or would you like to try something from Estonia, or any number of other places that are making wine? And it is working. So far, since restaurants and everything have opened up and they're doing this, they said it's working. They are doing some great sales. People are enjoying the diversity, and it is something that it looks like it might continue. The trend might continue after not just when they start up, but continue for some time. Okay. Texas wine, a booming industry, with Central Texas doing the most. They're really selling a lot of wines in Central Texas. Austin, 4 years ago in 2017, Texas, 4 years ago in 2017, had 352 wineries. Now, just 4 years later, and you even look at the fact that it went through 2020 when things didn't rise. Now, Texas has 547 wineries. Wow. The state's wine industry brought more than $13 billion into the economy in 2017 and created $600,000 worth of jobs. And it's exploded since then. Central Texas seems to be the big area that's doing it more than anything. When it started out, Texas had about 35 wineries in the whole state. And now, like I say, they've got about 550 wineries there. And Texas is also growing most of their own grapes. This is something else that they have been doing, point where they can't keep up with the demand. Something that's still an ongoing problem in not just Texas, but many states. They can't keep up with the demand within their state. This is why you go down to the store if you live anywhere than Texas or around Texas. You say, I would like a Texas wine. You're not going to find one, because just about everything that's produced in Texas is sold and drunk in Texas. Same thing with just about every other state in the nation. It's really difficult to find a lot of different wines from different states unless you're in that state or right next to it. It's just amazing. And with the 2020 being such a odd, strange, unusual year, It has created a different type of dynamic for grapes and wineries and everything within their own areas. So Missouri, I know, has really increased a lot of their wineries over the last couple of years. And COVID is one of the reasons they've increased, which seems odd, but people have been locked in. It's given wineries time to get their grapes growing, get wine on the shelf, and get into the groove, if you will, with wineries instead of battling it. Everything has been able to, family operated wineries have been able to do it themselves. So Texas is doing quite well. Not that they produce better wines than anybody else, although let me tell you, some of the Texan wines from the Hill Country is phenomenal. They do some great wines there, but Texas has a great year this past year, and it's booming, especially on Central Texas and the Hill Country and stuff like that. So if you get a chance to try any Texas wines, I highly recommend it. There's some really phenomenal wines coming out of Texas. Their cabs are just really, really good. So, let's see, a truck tips over North Carolina. You say, okay, so who cares if a truck tripped over? But it was full of wine. Oh, no. Oh, yes. It had a tractor trailer carrying dozens of boxes of wine turned over, littering a North Carolina road. This was Monday? Yeah, this was Monday, just this last Monday. Littering a road with broken glass and wine and all that. There was boxes, green glass, red labels all over the road. The truck was traveling northbound on US 421 in Winston-Salem, which is in North Carolina. And it tipped over. The driver had some minor injuries, but he didn't go to the hospital. And they, looking at pictures here, no other vehicles were in the accident, and it took them several hours to clean up the mess between sweeping it up and spraying it down and all that. So it brings a tear to the eye, doesn't it? That wine is wasted like that in the middle of the street. So, and one other thing too, I don't know if you all heard, but a tragic thing. A truck hit another truck, and it was in the Philippines or Sierra Leone in Africa. I don't remember where. I really don't. I just remember the story. But a truck hit a fuel truck and caused the fuel truck to flip over, and it was leaking fuel. And drivers, car drivers, taxi drivers, all that were jumping out and filling up containers with fuel. And people around the neighborhood was seeing this fuel, and they were all coming over and trying to fill up as many containers as they could with this fuel because it was like free fuel. And the truck exploded. And it killed 90-some-odd people, something like that. I think it was 93-something. And it injured dozens and dozens of others. Just a major tragedy. I saw that. I just shook my head for the tragic loss. But, free fuel. People couldn't pass up the opportunity. Yeah. Did you hear about that?
I did not. I can just look it up real quick.
Last week, but it was in a place where the fuel is at a premium, so therefore obviously they would want the fuel, and they figured free fuel, and they were taxi drivers stopped to get gas for the car and stuff like that, and exploded, and boy, what a tragedy! What a tragedy! So, just talking about this truck turning over here with the wine in it, that is a tragedy, but nothing like that one where it took lives. So, but yeah. Again, it brings a tear to your eye when you see wine shattered all over the road and all the glasses and everything. And we are done for another week. Give a veteran a hug. Always. You don't have to do it just on Veterans Day. Thank him for his service. If you are a veteran and someone thanks you, thank them for their support. And let's see. Is there anything else I want on this here? New Zealand wines in high demand despite extreme shortages. And there are some extreme shortages because of bottles. Bottles are not going out. A lot of wineries are wondering how they're going to bottle their wine because there is a shortage of bottles. There's a shortage of corks, not because there's not enough corks. It's because of the transportation is not getting them to the places. Same thing with bottles. Mm-hmm. Bottles are stuck on ships and they're not getting here. And the ones from Mexico are in high demand, and they're not able to keep up with the demand coming out of Mexico. So, but New Zealand is got high demand now, but not enough being bottled fast enough. And capsule free, yeah. We don't need a capsule. Okay, that's it for another week. I don't think next week we don't have a guest, but the week after is Thanksgiving, so we will be here next week, and then the following week we won't. Then we've got a couple guests coming up in December, maybe more, so we'll see how that plays out. I'm always working, trying to find more guests for us because it's always fun to talk to people and what they have to say. And so,
just in case, if you're going through our archives, you want to go back to what Ron was referencing earlier with Anthony Zhang of VinoVest. Mm-hmm. We talked to him on the show on March the 18th. So if you go back to the 18th, yes. Okay. That was when he was on. So do a quick scan or just put in the search box, you know, VinoVest or something to that effect, and it should pop up for you. So that was a good interview. Very interesting.
It was. He told us about investing and all that. That was fun. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Expensive, but yes, it is fun.
Yeah. Like I say, I don't have the money invested.
Good return,
in.
So.
Yeah. But it is good return. If you got the money.
Yeah. Invest. VinoVest.
Invest.
All right. We will close out the show for tonight for November 11th, and we'll return next Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, which is the 18th of November. So we'll see you then. Thanks for tuning in, and as always, have a great weekend. Be safe, and have a great week ahead, and we'll see you next Thursday. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And I'll run the audio here if I can remember how to do it. There we go.
Find the right page.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of
All About Wine. I forgot my
host, Ron. For show information, links to All About Wine on Twitter and Facebook, or to be a guest on the show, visit the show website at www.allaboutwineupr.com. Archive shows are available for download on iTunes
as a free purchase.
That's right.
No credit card necessary.
Unless you want to, you can responsibly.
That's right.
We'll see you next time on All About
Watch. There we go. I've lost my
mind.
My Block Talk Radio page disappeared. Let me go back here and pull it back up. There we go. Okay. Why did that disappear? That's strange.
Your browser window or something?
Yeah, my window was closed. It wasn't there. Oh, well.
Not good. Okay. Oh, wait a minute.